to be defined, the role of Spain in the Counter-Reformation. Spain was leading forward according to the suppression of Protestantism, and Protestantism was crushed in Spain. Spanish gold and Spanish troops supported anti-Protestant movements elsewhere. You realize that Protestantism was illegal. For the 17th century, 1600s, in general. The Counter-Reformation of Italy focused in various reforming orders, and I just mentioned these, the Leontines, the Bernabites, the Capuchins, and the Ursulines. You read about these in Latin writ, but I don't have time to go into it. So, look at the Counter-Reformation and the papacy. What were the primary problems facing the papacy? Well, reconciling tradition, the Pope is the administrative head of Christendom with the new realities. That is, if the Pope is the head of all Christians, how does the papacy live with Protestantism? He says he's not the head. Secondly, the menace of the Ottoman Turks, again, pressing in. And note this, the land that the Ottoman Turks... and the rising tide of nationalism. We said this over and over. You see, 500 years before this, Europe was just Christendom. And there may have been objections to the papacy, but they were theological objections. But now, as we've said over and over, now it's not simply a Christian in the Northern Holy Roman Empire, or a Christian in France, or a Christian in England, objecting to the corruptions of the papacy. Now you have Englishmen who don't want Italians ordering around. And Germans who don't want the Latins running their lives, taking their money. That is, men are thinking of themselves as French and English and German and Spanish. And this loosens the authority, weakens the authority of the papacy. Well, what was the response of the papacy? A series of reform popes replaced the old order. That is, the Pope did it. Martin Luther and others objected to the papacy, to the debts to which it had fallen. They were right. Did the Roman Catholic Church clean up its act in the papacy? The answer is yes. No more Renaissance popes. And so that whereas before the Protestant Reformation, you would find popes who had illegitimate children openly and who were ignorant and committed murder like the Borgia popes, who were classical humanists, not Christians in the thinking at all, has not been true since the Counter-Reformation. That is, the popes since then have been men of the Roman Catholic faith and men of fundamental morality, more like the modern pope. There was a modern, you may not believe in Roman Catholic. Church. And that came about as a result of the Counter-Reformation. Okay. Now, come to this section. I am going to skip over some material here. I put this in the syllabus more for the sake of completeness than any other thing. We deal with this in some of Professor Michael Chambers' classes. Let me just sort of summarize. This new thing, he makes some comments. I'm not going to deal with everything in the syllabus. But we have the rise of modernism, continue now. And some of this we deal with in the history and logic of science. We'll cover a lot of this in that course. But we call this the new thinking. The new thinking was in many ways a reaction to Protestant scholasticism. It had bogged down. Science arose within the church. The idea of order in nature that can be discovered by experiment and observation, which is what science means, that idea arises from the concept of the universe as being created by an intelligent God. Therefore, we have order. there's no God, then there's no all order in the universe is illusion.
But anyway, there were two things that, well, what we're saying is that when the rise of this new way of thinking, the new science, what many call the modern mind, if the church was ill prepared to meet it for two major reasons, and I'll just summarize and give those for you, take notes on this, because this is nothing that's going to respond to the syllabus. Number one, and as I mentioned the syllabus, Protestant theology was irrational. Calvinism is anti-logical. Calvinism does not make sense. Remember we studied the great Calvinistic creed. We studied this in soteriology in the course. Which is, when you got a creedal statement, take for example the Westminster Confession of Faith, which is the standard creed of Presbyterianism. God caused it, but he cannot be charged with being responsible for it, which makes no sense whatever. As a statement, as a major creedal statement, that was representative. You got a theology that said, this is Protestant theology, that says man can obey the gospel and must do so and will be held responsible to God if he does not obey the gospel. But on the other hand, man is totally depraved, he's disabled, he cannot obey the gospel. He cannot be born again until he has faith, and he cannot have faith until he's born again. You cannot have faith without regeneration. You cannot be regenerated without faith. That's really illogical. Understand? And thinking people reject that.
Retarded.
Yeah, retarded. Wasn't retarded, but it's irrational. Fixed all these dogmas, they could not be changed. And, for instance, when Copernicus said that our universe is heliocentric, that is, the sun is the center of it, and the sun's earth revolves around the sun, not the other way around, the church declared wrong. Why? Well, the church had declared for Aristotle, the church was not defending, you hear me, the church was not defending biblical cosmology, the Bible doesn't say that. The church was defending classical Greek cosmology, that of Aristotle. But the church had decided that was the truth, had fixed it, and allowed no thought beyond it. So when Copernicus said the earth revolves around the sun, the church said it doesn't. We have a geocentric universe, that is, the earth is the center of it, everything is around the earth. So that sort of bogs down, and again, thinking men reject that. And what Roman Catholic traditional authoritarianism had done to Catholic scholarship, the great creeds, the Augsburg Confession of Faith, the Formula of Concord for Lutheranism, the Westminster Confession of Faith, the Belgian Confession of Faith that we haven't talked about in here, they fixed Protestant thinking in the same way so that traditional Christian thinking, Christian scholarship, using Christian historic sense, broad historic sense, was theology was irrational. So that what was rejected in Europe, and we talked about in Germany especially for the reason we've gone into it, we talked about the 30 Years' War, right, this great disillusionment with Christianity. First of all, you got Europe disillusioned with Christianity in the first place because of all the wars. So thinking people were disillusioned with religion, and we certainly can't blame them, can we? And they were disillusioned with the irrationality of Calvinistic theology of Lutheran. They were disillusioned with the hidebound mentality of the church, Protestant and Catholic, so that there was a general abandonment of the Christian religion by thinking. Religious institutionalism, and rejecting Calvinistic theology, which I reject. But the great paradox of this is that the leaders of the new science were Christians. That is, were the men who founded modern science were men who believed in God. Most of them considered themselves Christians, and what they were trying to discover was the order that the intelligent God had built into his universe. You see, one thing was, if you read the humanist literature, you read a modern textbook, that you probably had in high school, you get the impression that science rose in opposition to Christianity. The modern science owes its existence to Christian thought, to the Christian worldview. As a matter of fact, the Christian worldview, or at least the theistic worldview, as I said before, is not accurate. And science is the discovery of order, right? And secondly, if the theistic worldview is not the accurate worldview, it's not the truth, then all human thought is worthless, fundamentally worthless. As C.S. Lewis put it, if our thinking is simply an evolutionary accident, the end product of the chemical cause and effect process, culminating in this idea, then it is totally undependable. As he put it, one accident that could be used to explain another. You understand that, don't you? That is, if all that thought is the end product, is the electrochemical end product of an evolutionary process. If it is determined by nature, that and nothing else, then it's unreliable as an investigative mechanism. That is, human thought, investigation, and analysis becomes meaningless. Well, Michael Chambers gets into this, but he hasn't talked to me, so I'm going to further. Yes.
So is it logical to say that Christianity was not
well, modern science grew out of Christian thought, but modern science was opposed by the church, Protestant and Catholic. So you've got to separate between the two. That is, the church opposed the new thinking, but many of those who produced the new thinking, produced modern science, they were all believers.
But those that did produce it, were doing so was going against the normal grain of Christian thought.
Yes.
Therefore, that's what I was getting at. That
Copernicus,
in addition to a Christian.
That's right. Copernicus was not rejected by the church because he didn't believe in Jesus. He did. He was rejected because he believed.
Because he didn't accept what the church had declared to be the right cosmology, which was Aristotle, not the Bible. Yes.
Does this still hold true today about the thinking man as far as the Christianity?
Yes. The thinking man today rejects Christianity as he understands it. And thinking man, I said this a number of times, I think the greatest enemy to the church today are men like Jim Baker and Pat Robertson and these guys who are intellectually our nitwits. Some of these other preachers. There's some good preachers on television who are very sound, you know, who are not that way. But people look at that and say, well, that's Christianity, count me out. And I'm with them. That's Christianity, count me out. Well, you get one of those Tammy Baker. And you get somebody, you know, who's got anything between his ears besides chicken soup, but he's gonna. I mean, when you have unmitigated nitwittery, pure nincompoopery passing as the Christian faith. And also, I've been thinking about it more at the higher level.
You assume that
Calvinism was Christianity. This was Christian thought. Who assumed that Calvinism was biblical theology. That's what they were assuming. And they rejected it because it was irrational. And they're right. It is irrational, but they're wrong. It's not biblical doctrine. That is why we're going to study next quarter when the American Restoration Movement began and began to preach New Testament Christianity. It became known as the Thinking Man Church. That is, the educated people flooded into the Christian church. At one time, they were just assumed, before the turn of the century, if you went to a town in the Midwest, if you wanted to know where the college professors went to church, and where the school teachers went to church, and where the lawyers went to church, and where the doctors went to church, if they weren't Episcopalians, they went to a Christian church. Now, that isn't true anymore, but because of what was rational, Christian gospel that was biblical, and therefore was rational. Biblical Christianity is ultimately rational. It's Calvinism, which is irrational. You see what I'm saying? So there's a rejection of both at the level of this pure dim-wittery, some of these TV people, and there's still this objection to Calvinism. So what they reject is not, and I would point out, listen to me, let's not get a wrong picture. This is, again, I'm being over here, Professor Michael Chambers' territory. But we must understand that the world's great thinkers have been theists, mostly Christians. In Western history, Western world, Western civilization. That is, you do not find while there are great thinkers who are not believers, it is our side who has the great thinkers. What you get. You get high-flown insanity. It produces things like Nazi Germany and socialism, and French radicalism. And it's really insane. We Christians must be aware that it is our position that is rational, that makes sense. It is. And I've been on both sides of the fence. I've defended this at the university. That it is only the Christian worldview that ultimately is rational. It isn't borne out. That's why, for instance, where an evolutionist debate creations, the evolutionists always lose. And they lose in the first 5 minutes. When atheists debate believers, all kinds of debates, atheists never win. They never even put up a good battle. Where you have equals, you know, roughly equals debating, where the issues come through, where the issues decide, not the gifts, the natural gifts of the debaters, atheism never even makes a good showing. Atheism only sounds good, and secular humanism only sounds good when it's unopposed. That's one of the reasons they don't want Christian thought in the schools. Why don't they want creation and evolution taught together? Creation is so silly. Well, then put them together, let them be taught together, and its silliness will be exposed. Right? The trouble is, you put them together, and evolution loses out very quickly on the basis of pure science. See what I'm saying? And so I was talking to a fellow all the time. But at the university, he was a young, smart, he was like a sophomore kind of atheist, and he was telling me. Explain to me the terms of neo-Darwinian gradualism, the creation of the one cell animal. Explain to me the stages by which it came about. And he said, well, so far we can't. I said, there you are. You can't explain the existence of a one-celled animal, an amoeba, yet you expect me to explain the existence of the whole universe. You know, don't come around telling me you've explained the whole universe until you explain that part of it. You understand? Well, anyway. I forget that the part about Rollins, and I had that discussion with the humanist over there at Rollins College. One of the professors there met me in his
wife was girlfriend. I never even parking lot. Attacked me, made me rational. I said, well, just explain the gap. Explain the abiogenesis. Explain life and non-life. He immediately said, well, in terms of the second law of thermodynamics, he said, well, so there's no problem. So the Earth is an open system, and sun energy coming in. I said, well, wait a minute, that doesn't answer anything, because unless you've got a, unless you have an energy converting mechanism operating from within, the sun degenerates, it does not generate, and unless you have built-in antecedent intelligence to guide the process, you get up in the chaos, and so you have to have an internal energy converting mechanism programmed by intelligence before the sun can produce anything but... sinking in the Titanic, the boating accident. That's a gray area. I like that line. He said, well, I'll admit that's a gray area. Gray? It's where the whole battle is won or lost. And if you can't, if he can't explain that, answer that, he couldn't answer anything. You don't have the beginning of life, you don't have anything. That's like saying, I've got a penny, so I'm just shy of $1 million. I'm just that close to having $1 million. You know, that's the impression they give in the textbooks. You know, we're just that close to solving it. I mean, you know, out of 1 million possible questions, we've partially answered one of them. But we're just about there, you know, give us a little more time. Turning away of the quote scientific mind from faith was not a rejection of biblical Christianity. Those men could not reject biblical Christianity. They never saw it. What they rejected was Calvinistic theology, Roman Catholic scholasticism, and hidebound creedism. And they rejected it, and I think we would reject it. I do. But men, on the other side of that, what I'm trying to teach you, men operating from the basic biblical, from fundamental biblical theism, you know, apart from theology, these were the men who founded modern science. Their basic thesis was, if there is an intelligent God, and he has created an intelligent universe, or holistically into a telescope, we can discover the order that God has built into the universe. That is, it's like to use an analogy, like the watchmaker, the famous watchmaker analogy. If you believe, when you find a watch, if you believe that there is a watchmaker who made it, then you might take the watch apart to see how he did it. Why? Well, maybe I can do it. Maybe we can learn something about time. But if you believe that watch just is an accident of nature, it doesn't do any good to look at it, see how it was put together. Why? Because it couldn't happen again. There's no order. It's just an accident. You know what I'm saying? There's no watchmaker. There's no reason to. There's no fundamental reason to examine the watch. Okay. Did you know this making sense to you? I'm painting with a very broad brush. But you can look at examples of this. And you can see under B, for Luther said, Joshua commanded the sun to stand still, not the earth. Therefore, that proves that Copernicus was wrong. Does it prove Copernicus was wrong? No, it doesn't. Maybe in the sword. Now, when, you know, this idea, you know, the Protestants were saying, well, the Bible says the earth was created in 4004 BC in September. And therefore, that's what the earth was created. Does the Bible say the earth was created in 4004 BC? It absolutely does not. The church was saying that. The Bible doesn't say that. Well, the Bible says that in the beginning. Understand? God created the earth. This controversy, look at the bottom of page 86. the significance of this controversy for the church. It undermined the authority of the Bible, listen to me, because these ideas were identified as biblical ideas, but as a matter of fact, they weren't most of the time. It emphasized the insignificance of man. They thought, and this is illogical, they thought that if you admit that the earth is not the center of the universe, then somehow you are saying that man cannot be the center of God's creation. You understand that? That was the assumption. Is that logical? That's called a non sequitur. It doesn't follow at all. That is, theology, man's androcentricity, to use a technical term, the idea that man is the reason. Spins around what revolves around what. There's no connection. You see, you'll see that. But they assumed there was. If they defended the geocentric universe. That's like the argument. Let me show you. This is an analogy. It's like the argument. Well, you know, there must be life on other planets. Why? Well, there's so many of them. Surely God would not create all those billions and billions of planets and suns if there's not the life just. That argument has nothing to do with this. There might be life on other planets. I don't think there is, but there might be. But that argument doesn't establish it. Why? Because the assumption is, we know, well, why would God go to all that trouble? Trouble for God. Mm-hmm. Because that's like saying, if God created one world, there's twice as much trouble to create two, and three times as much trouble to create three, and so forth. Listen, for God to create 100 million billion universes, there's no more trouble than to create one. God, when God rested, it wasn't because he was tired. Says, do you believe that God would create all these multiplied billions of heavenly bodies and put life on one? And my answer is, why not? Size, you know, and also, you'll see as those talks about this, for some strange reason, in this modern debate, in the historic sense, the size, when people discovered how big the universe was, all of a sudden God became unreasonable to believe in God. And C.S. Lewis raises the question, when did size become an argument against God? There's no logic there. There's no reason there. You know, look, we used to think the universe was small, and we believed in God. Now we know how big it is, so we don't believe. They evaluate an argument by dating it. You know, evaluate morality. You know, sure we can live together without getting married. Why? Well, this is 1986 or something. Does that have to do with it? No. As if ethics were established by looking at the calendar. You know, what year it is has nothing to do with whether it's right to live together without getting married. You understand? That's just totally irrational. That's the kind of thinking we're looking at. Let me tell you something, you guys. I mean, I've been to university. I went through that discipline. I've been trained in that discipline. Now listen, the irrationality is on our side of the fence. You hear more irrational thinking, the PhDs and the doctorate level courses you can shake a stick at. I mean, total irrationality. What I'm saying, it weakened the sense of God. It demoted the authority of the Bible and of religion, but not rationalism. But it was irrational, and that's why today you realize the trend is going our way again. Although this thing is being polarized, you see, the more we learn about the universe, the tide is turned, so that the leaders in what we might call, to use a cliche, modern scientific thought, that there are a healthy segment. For instance, in 1955, say between 1955 and 1965, if you were on the staff of a university, major university, especially in the sciences, and you let it be known that you were a believer, that you were a Christian, you believed in the Bible in some sense, the Word of God, you believed in divine revelation, you would not only be laughed at, you're very likely to lose your job. That is not true anymore. You realize that some of the leading professors of major universities in the hard sciences publish regularly in Christian journals. When I was at the university, anybody who says, well, you know, a thinking person can't be a believer simply is displaying their profound, unmitigated ignorance of something, no matter what. And even among those who don't, who aren't believers, you see, even, I found this at the doctorate level, that I stayed under men who were not believers, who were atheists and agnostics, but they did not laugh at the idea of being a believer. They lost too many debates for that. You understand? Well, they themselves were not believers. They did not. You're not going to kill me for being a believer. See what I'm saying? Because, why? Because the idea that Christian people believe in the Bible cannot be intellectual, that idea simply is gone by the boards, by those who know what's going on. And a man marks himself as being prejudiced. He says that today. Even among unbelievers. Another exception to everything. I call it. I only have one man actually try to talk me out of being a Christian, the chairman of the department, who was on my committee. He asked me, couldn't restrain himself when he asked me, the thing you must see is that biblical thinking or the religion was not, the Christian religion was not rejected by these people because the Christian religion is intrinsically indefensible. That's not true at all. I'll give you all the reasons. Well, the rise of modern philosophy, look at this. I am not going to go over that with you. Because the only thing important to restoration appearance is we come to that restoration history. You get this in Professor Chambers' class, systematically. So I put it in the syllabus here so that you would... Page 89, you get this not only in Professor Chambers' class, but in Dr. Smith's class, The Rise of Documentary Higher Criticism. You studied that, that's not new to you. JEDP, you've heard JEDP, haven't you? All that stuff. The critical theories, Old Testament. Well, this is where it fits in. Deism, you study that in Professor Michael Chambers. Page 91, rationalism, deism in trance. We'll skip over that. I'll not test you on it. I want to come to the bottom of page 94. The Darwin. Now, you must understand, Darwin changed everything, but you must understand why. I'm going to summarize for you. Listen to me. There is anybody today who says that Darwin said anything about the origin of species. Suppose his book was 1851, and he published the origin of species. You go to the biology department today, and anybody, any professor at a major university who taught Darwin, who taught anything of Darwin's science, would lose his job. Darwin said nothing about origins, nor did he say anything about species that is recognized as being. But modern biology rejects even neo-Darwinism as now dying. Neo-Darwinism was not old Darwinism. But let me tell you what Darwin did. You see, there arose this philosophical and sometimes hysterical rejection of what we call Christianity, biblical theism. But not all those names skipped over Kant, Hegel, Mitchell, and all out there. But so what Darwin contributed was this. See, Darwin did not create the idea of evolution. But see, evolution did not arise from the seedbed of science. Now listen to me. The theory of evolution did not arise from observation of anything. Historically speaking, the theory of evolution. Existential objection of God. You see, if you reject God, you don't have creation, right? If you don't have a creator, you can't have a creation. Well, if you have a world, you understand? You live in a world that's here, and you don't have a creator, the only thing left is some kind of evolutionary theory. Chance, you understand? As philosophers say, as they say in the philosophy, there are only so many men in the room. There are only two basic explanations. Understand? Either God or chance, either creator or chance. Okay? So, on the basis of the fact that evolution or some kind of evolution was the only thing left, then it was accepted as being true, but it was not explainable. What Darwin did was, it appeared at the time, we now know it's not true, Darwin, it was assumed, made an existing theory intellectually defensible. He made evolution science with his idea of the production of the origin of species through natural selection. All that term, he himself did not coin that term. Now, and listen, when Darwinism all of a sudden it became the new way to think, evolution became the thing, it was accepted in the social sciences by men like Spencer and William Grant Sumner. They pushed it. It was accepted in the political science, in the field of what became political science. It was not accepted in biology, in the hard sciences. Why? Because from the beginning, the scientists, the biologists pointed out that Darwin, as they put it, Darwin explained the arrival, the survival of the fittest, but not the arrival. Even from the beginning. You understand that? Darwin was never accepted in the field of the hard sciences. It was accepted in the field of it was accepted in what we would now call the philosophy department. It was accepted in sociology. It was accepted in theology. Because that was where it started. The idea of evolution. The idea of evolution did not start in the hard sciences, and it was not accepted by the hard sciences. Why? Because we about to do the work. So a bad scientific theory became all of a sudden the basis for what was supposed to be good. One of the reasons why why doesn't the modern socialist state work? The answer is it's built on Darwin. And Darwin was simply wrong. It's built on false assumptions. But hear me, in the area of biology, it was always recognized as being false. Therefore, when when Darwin was accepted, it was accepted in what is called neo-Darwinism, which added the work of Mendel, his genetics, and added the mutation, natural selection working on the mutation. That's not what Darwin said, and that did not create the problem. All I'm saying is that even when Darwin was even accepted in biology, in the field of biology, it was not Darwin. It was a form of Darwin, which is now rejected. What I'm trying to teach you is this. What Darwin did was offer a pseudo or seeming rationale, or it offered an illusion of rationality and intellectual respectability at the philosophical level that was being earnestly sought all along. It did not arise in science, it was not defended by science, it has never survived science. Does that make sense? Do y'all get that? Darwinism did not come from science, it was not accepted by science, hard science, and the biology reasons. And it has been rejected for the hard science. That seemed to make what everybody wanted to be true respectable. It was jumped on with both feet by everybody but the biologists. It was about biology. Did y'all get that? It was never accepted by the biologists. They saw its flaws right away. But in theology and in sociology and in philosophy, it was accepted because they couldn't see the flaws. And it's run rampant ever since. I want you to know something. That the leading critics, those who are rejected, the sternest fighters against evolution today are biologists. Biologists, the theory of evolution works very well as long as you stay out of the laboratory. And we'll look at it very closely. That is, you stay away from biology, and you can make evolution work pretty well. As you get into biology, it starts to fall apart. That's why Dr. Karl Popper, the leading philosopher today of science, who's not a Christian, he says, and he's right, evolution is not, nor has it ever been, nor ever could it be, a scientific theory. It's a philosophy of biology. A philosophy of biology. It's all it ever could be. Well, but you see what Darwin did? All of a sudden, people thought they could reject God and have an intellectual basis for it, a scientific basis, a biological basis. And it was not true. You go to a modern university, and I take my word for it, I've been through it. You go to a modern university, you go to the religion department, you go to the sociology department, and you can be taught theories and theologies that are based on Darwin. But you go to the biology department, Darwin's like that.
What do they teach?
Who?
In the hard science.
Mostly they stay away from origins. They teach processes, what is going on now, how things act.
But it doesn't have anything